This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
All right, David Jenkins, thank you so much. Welcome here to Sports Saturday, the last Saturday in March. How about that? We will have Cardinal baseball for real on the radio Thursday, opening day in Cincinnati, Thursday, I think 2:15 with the pregame start, of course, on WSMI AM 1540, FM 106.9 and 92.9. Redbirds have just three spring games left. We'll have them on the radio today and on the radio again tomorrow. Tonight's game, 4:55 with the coverage against the Marlins, of course, on WSMI AM 1540, 106.9 and 92.9 FM. And, you know, when you do a weekly show like we do here, a lot happens in between programs. And as we sat here last week, we were talking about the Illini, how great they looked, the deep run they were going to make, and they lost the next day. So that was a abrupt ending to the Illini season last week, but that's the nature of the tournament, one and done. If you have an off night at the wrong time, you are toast. And that is what happened to the Illini last week. We'll get into that a little bit more here as the hour rolls along. But we want to start this morning talking spring high school football with Hillsboro head football coach Aaron Duff. And Duffy, thank you for a few minutes of your time this morning, sir. How's it going?
It's going. We just got done with some film here this morning.
And, you know, Duffy, I was thinking about it last night. It's weird, like with football season, normally it starts hot and gets colder as the season goes along. But here, the weather's going to get nicer as the season moves along. So that's kind of enjoyable.
Hope so. I hope it quits raining.
Well, and, you know, that's the thing about spring. You never know. And I thought week one, the field conditions, I think, across the area were sloppy, might be the way to describe it. But last night, did it seem a little bit better, or was it still real wet?
Oh, no. Yeah, no, our field was in really good shape. Fred Butler and our maintenance staff does a really good job, and our field was in great shape.
Debbie, I want to talk about that just for a minute because, you know, North Mac's got the turf now. Carlinville's got the turf. And I don't know that people realize how much time and effort it goes in to getting that football field ready for play. Talk about the people that make that happen. And, I mean, talk about unsung heroes. There you go.
Oh, yeah. No, like I said, Fred Butler runs our maintenance staff, our custodians. I mean, I chip in because I, you know, AD duties, but you know, that's a 2-day process. They do a great job. They paint that big H on the field, all the numbers, you know, mowing it, taking care of it. A lot of work goes into getting a field ready for a Friday night.
Whenever I think about a football field being painted, I think of that old, it was a Snickers commercial when I was a little kid. There was an old man just slaving out there in the end zone, painting Chiefs in the end zone, and he steps back and the guy goes, "Who are the chefs? He forgot to put the I in."
Right. Yeah, well, we just got to put an H out there. We don't have to spell. We're good.
Thank goodness. You don't want me spelling anything, I'll tell you that much. Duffy, as you sit here now through 2 weeks, just kind of your thoughts and feelings about the first 2 weeks of this spring season.
As far as we go, we just talked about it in film. We are so close to putting it all together. You know, we got some young guys in some spots that are getting some valuable experience. I thought we played well the past 2 weeks, you know, even though we're 0-2. We're doing a lot of good things. I mean, last night we had, I think we had around 317 yards of offense. We threw for 180. So we're doing a lot of good things. We were in the game. We come out, last night up 14-0. We made a couple mistakes. They got up on us, but then we brought it back to a 2-score game. So we're doing some really good things. We just got some youth in some spots and some new guys in experience. They're getting some valuable experience now. And we're close to putting it all together.
And, you know, you talked about the youth and the inexperience. And in some ways, this is a great type of year to get that experience at the varsity level.
It is, you know, but we still want to win.
Right.
We still want to get some wins under our belt, even though, you know, this is sort of, you know, everybody keeps telling me, let's just practice and putting everything together for next year. There's no playoffs. Yeah, but, you know, we're still competitive. We still want to get the wins. But yeah, we're gaining some valuable experience.
And you know, that's exactly right, Duffy. I mean, there's no playoffs, but high school sports is more than just playoffs and making the playoffs. You know, it's all about competing, playing, all these different things that go into it. So whether there's playoffs or not, you're still putting the time, effort, and energy into this football season.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, actually, it seems like we're putting more time in now. You know, we were so in a hurry to get ready. putting a lot of extra time in, trying to figure out how to practice, you know, with basketball still going on. And now, you know, it's here, and we're trying to get things done in a spring with rain, which is a different thing, sloppy fields. So, you know, it's been a challenge, but it's been a challenge for everybody. And, you know, like I said, we're getting there. I'm really happy with our kids and how we're playing. We're 1,000 times better than 1 year ago, and I think it's showing on the field.
And from your perspective as the head coach, that's all you want is to see that improvement, you know, from year to year, obviously, but then from week to week and in practice. But for you to feel like you've improved that much from last year, boy, that is real positive here as you continue to move forward.
Yeah, it feels really good. I mean, we're able to do some stuff this year as far as play calling, you know, running our defense with the experience we got last year to now. So, I'm having fun. I think we threw, you know, we threw 22 times first game. We threw another 20-some last night, and that's with some youth back there. So, I'm enjoying it, and our kids are enjoying it. And, you know, we're trying to get that first win.
Better be careful, Duffy. That's a lot of pass attempts in Toppertown. I don't know.
Well, you know, I'm already getting blamed because that's my, you know, my kid, a quarterback. So that's, you know, that's the only reason we're throwing.
Well, of course, yes.
Yeah, you know, no, we have the personnel right now. You know, I think we threw for 180 last night and a couple touchdowns. So we got some kids that can catch the ball, and that's another reason. You know, you got to do what your talent you have and sort of adapt to that.
Well, that's what coaching is. I mean, it's not having a rigid system and saying this is the way we do it. I don't care what kind of personnel we have. This is how we do it. You have to adapt to what you have. That's called good coaching.
Well, you got to try to do that. And you know, we don't even have triple I on our wristbands this year. So, you know, I just didn't think we had the personnel for it. We're trying to run a little bit of a spread hybrid look, and it's working out so far. We're moving the ball and, you know, doing some good things.
You mentioned your son at quarterback. What's that like, just from the dad perspective, on the sideline, watching your boy compete at the varsity level?
It's pretty cool. I'm enjoying it. We got to separate dad and coach type thing. You know, him coming off the field, being mad, upset, he's got to talk to me as a coach. We've had to learn that, you know, a little bit. But, you know, I also get him at home, show him some stuff on film, which, you know, is a luxury you don't get with a quarterback that's not your kid. So it's working out well. I've also, you know, got to take an extra pill here or there and make sure I stay calm, you know. But it's been the first 2 weeks here, it's been enjoyable to see him play.
I'm sure it has been. And Duffy, just the final thing here, talk to me about your seniors. We know, obviously, a completely strange way for them to go out with their senior football season. 6 games, 2 already in the book. How are they doing so far through these first 2 weeks?
You know, they're upset that they're 0-2, but at the same time, we keep telling them how lucky we are to be playing and getting games in, and they're getting to play their senior year. So they're giving us everything they got. They're being really good on the field for us. They're being good leaders, talking to our young guys and coaching, and that's what you want from a group of seniors, you know, that also are mentors to the younger guys.
Has enough time passed now where Greenville just feels like any other game to you, or is there still a little extra for you in that ball game?
It's not as much, you know. I coached with other coaching staff forever, and some of the guys on their coaching staff now I coached at Greenville, so makes me feel even older.
Right.
So, we still have that connection. You know, we joke around with their coaches, we talk to them. One of their coaches, me and Coach Strickle, actually played college football with. So, there's still a little extra there, but it's another high school game, and you just got to get ready for it.
Sounds great. Duffy, thanks for a few minutes of your time this morning, sir. We'll have you on the radio next week when you host the Cavaliers.
All right. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
All right. That's Aaron Duff, the head coach of the Hillsboro Hilltoppers. I remember David Terry used to talk about that, too, in terms of he's like, I called your parents' game, and in some cases, I called your grandparents' game.
Yeah. That was a frequent occurrence with Terry, it seemed like.
It was. But, you know, when you do something for 40 years, that's how it's going to work. But, yeah, I bet that does make Duffy feel a little bit old. It's like, wait a minute, you're coaching? I coached you. What's going on here?
When you do something long enough, that's just what happens.
Nope, that's exactly right.
But 20-some-odd passing attempts in a game? What's going on?
So Greenville beat Hillsborough last night 44-20. Pena, in a game we had on FM 106, came back from a 12-0 deficit last night and beat Carlinville 19-15. Southwestern over Gillespie 34-24, and Vandalia topped Roxana 28-17. Now Staunton, they will be playing today at Breeze Modern Day. That is scheduled for a 1 o'clock kick. In the Sangamo Conference last night, a game we had on FM 106, North Mac goes into Auburn, beats the Trojans 23-9. So North Mac off to a 2-0 start. Your defending 3A state champion Williamsville Bullets off to a 2-0 start. They beat New Berlin 55-0, and that will be one of our broadcast features next week, Williamsville at North Mac. Elsewhere in the Sangamo last night, Moreau Forsyth beat Athens 56-12, Pleasant Plains over Porta 19-18, and Riverton beat Pittsfield 26-25. Prairie State Conference last night, Nokomis is 2-0 on the year. They beat Westland 29-14, Freeburg over Wood River 54-12, and Alton Marquette topped Salem 28-21. Prairie State today has Dupo at Madison. That will be a 1 o'clock kick. In the Central State 8 last night, Glenwood beat Jacksonville 35-14, Griffin over MacArthur 54-0, and Normal U-High beat Southeast 49-6. This afternoon, Rochester's at Springfield High. That will be a 2 o'clock kick. WIBC South last night, Greenfield Northwestern beat West Central 14-8. North Green topped Pleasant Hill 33-30. In the WIBC North, Brown County beat Beardstown 38-12 and Minden Unity over Triopia 8-0. Coming up today in the WIBC South, Calhoun is at Carrollton. WIBC North, Camp Point Central will be at Jacksonville Route. Both of those games will kick at 1 o'clock. Some other scores from last night in the Mississippi Valley. Civic Memorial over Jersey 14-7. Triad beat Highland 28-14. In the Apollo Conference, it was Mattoon over Taylorville 19-14. Mount Zion beat Muhammad Seymour 44-34. And Effingham topped Charleston 34-14. Coming up in eight-man football today, Pawnee will travel to Martinsville. That game will kick at 1 o'clock. Going to get to a break. On the other side, we're going to talk with Steve Woolley, reminisce about his Hall of Fame coaching career with the Southwestern Piesol Birds. We're going to catch up with Lincolnwood soccer coach Joe Webb. That'll happen just past 9:30. Litchfield volleyball coach Mitchell Hughes on the docket at 9:45. And then David, coming up at 10 o'clock, we're going to have medium-sized Ed join us. Of course, longtime Blues season ticket holder. I think since the 67 season, he has been a season ticket holder, but he knew Bobby Plager. So we will get medium-sized Ed's thoughts.
Middle-sized Ed, I think is what he says.
Middle-sized?
I think it's what the ads say, but I can't remember now.
He's still Big Ed to me.
Yeah, he'll always be Big Ed.
He'll always be Big
Ed. He's a tall guy, so it works either way.
That's right. So we'll talk with Ed Wernstein about Bobby Plager coming up about 10 o'clock this morning on WSMI-FM 106. We'll find out if it's medium-sized or middle-sized.
Yeah, we will.
We'll find out. We'll take a break. On the other side, we will talk with Steve Woolley about his Hall of Fame coaching career when Sports Saturday rolls on.
Back to Sports Saturday here on WSMI, and we rejoin Tim Mize.
Thanks, David. Cardinal baseball for you today, 4:55 with the pregame on WSMI AM 1540, FM 106.9 and 92.9, as the Redbirds are down to just 3 spring games left. Opening day in Cincinnati will be on Thursday. And, of course, once the regular season gets underway, we will have all 162 Cardinal games for you this year on WSMI AM 1540, FM 106.9, and 92.9. Coming up later in the hour, we're going to talk Lincolnwood soccer with head coach Joe Webb, Litchfield volleyball with their head coach Mitchell Hughes, and we will catch up with Ed Wernstein and talk about Bobby Plager. And it did come out yesterday that Bobby had a cardiac event, and that is what led to the car crash. So the car crash didn't actually have anything to do with the passing of Bobby Plager. It was a cardiac event that took the life of Mr. Blue. So we will talk with Ed Wernstein about 10 o'clock about Bobby Plager. Happy to be joined on the phone right now by Steve Woolley. Of course, he just retired as the Southwestern girls basketball coach. And Steve, thank you so much for a few minutes of your time here. I want to reminisce about your career, but I had not factored this in with the different nature of all the seasons. You're still coaching middle school basketball. So that's a little bit odd.
Yes, very odd. You go, especially to go in that order. I'm used to doing the middle school first and then the high school, so kind of going in backwards, and the skill level goes down, so it's a little bizarre.
And I guess you obviously knew that, so that was probably in the back of your mind there as you knew your final varsity game was over, but I still got coaching to do.
Yeah, and honestly, I enjoy it so much that, you know, I didn't mind. And it's just, like I say, it's just a little different this year, but I still enjoy it a lot.
Well, and maybe, Steve, maybe it's just actually perfect for it to be that way, because it was your foresight to get into the lower levels years ago before that was the norm. And I've always thought that was the foundation of your program, was your youth levels.
Yeah, I've kind of mentioned this before at times, but, you know, like I was coaching a boys program and had taken a younger group of kids, a sophomore group, through their senior year and, you know, had a really good ending to their career. Our girls coach was leaving the district, and my daughter was like a third grader, so kind of for selfish reasons, I sort of looked at that as an opportunity to get over there and, you know, take over the middle school program, sort of build the high school program, and, you know.
The rest is history, as they say.
Here we are.
Yes. Now, you were the boys coach for 3 years. You went 57-24 from the 94-97 season, and then 24 years as the girls head coach. See, if you had two losing seasons in 24 years, two losing seasons, you won 530 games with the girls program, only 161 losses. And I know when you're in it, you don't really stop and think about the success you've had and all the great times, but as you've had a little bit of time now to kind of sit back and reflect, can you really fathom the success that Southwestern girls basketball's had over the last 2.5 decades?
Well, like you said, I mean, like, you get kind of into it and you just don't. I've never been a big person into stats and all that kind of thing anyway, but I mean, yeah, looking back now, I mean, you just kind of appreciate everybody's hard work that had something to do with the program, you know, all the coaches and the girls and, you know, even the administration backing it and everything. So, I mean, you know, it's just kind of like that stuff starting to kind of settle in a little bit.
You see, I always loved watching your teams compete because defensively there was nothing free when you were playing the Piasaw Birds. If you were the primary ball handler for one of your opponents, you were going to have somebody right in your hip pocket the entire game. Just kind of talk about that philosophy and how defensive intensity can really set a great tone for a program.
Yeah, obviously getting the kids to buy into that, because it does take a lot of energy and effort on their part and a lot of focus. And, you know, teaching man is obviously a little harder than teaching zone. So you have to get kids buy into it. I think starting them in the middle school and, you know, getting some of the preliminary things knocked out, the terminology and all that stuff, definitely helps. And then obviously having the type of kids that have that work ethic, you know, to want to get after it a little bit, definitely helps as well.
Well, I think too, the comfort level for kids, they're around you from the middle school level, so when they get to high school, there's no big change there. Because Steve, you may have mellowed a little bit, but you're a fairly intense fella.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's kind of not faded a lot. I'm still very competitive at whatever I'm doing. I just feel like the old motto, if you're going to do something, do it the best you can do it. And that's what I've always tried to preach to the kids. You know, if we're going to be here a couple hours every night practicing, let's try to get the best, you know, get the most out of what we have. So,
you see, when I started at WSMI, that was right around the 05-06 season. And I followed that team all the way to the Super Sectional that year. Of course, you entered that game 30-0, and you never got to the state tournament, obviously, but you had teams that were every bit state tournament worthy, and that team that was 30-0 entering the Super, man, that was a special group of kids.
Yeah, obviously my daughter was in that group, so it was a real special group. A lot of those kids I had started with early on in third and fourth grade, so you develop that closeness with the kids, and you know, obviously it was a talented group of people, just the connections, you know, with the kids and stuff. And then, like you said, I mean, you know, we've had over the years quite a few groups that I feel like have, you know, really strong groups of kids. But sometimes you can't always control the path that you take, you know, towards the state final and that kind of thing, or what happens to kid, you know, an injury here or whatever can, you know, kind of throw you off a little bit too. But yeah, I mean, I feel like we've been consistent, and I feel like, you know, if we're on somebody's schedule, that we definitely get their attention, and it's something that they'll point to on their schedule, and that's kind of what we've always strived to do.
Talking with Steve Woolley here, and Steve, I've never brought this up to you because, quite frankly, I was always a little bit scared to do so. But now that you're retired, the 13-14 team, Maddie Grilling's sophomore year, I've never seen a team get jobbed like you guys got jobbed in that sectional. Does that game just stick in your crawl, or have you gotten over it? Because you won the 32-minute game, but it lasted 32 minutes and 2 seconds.
Obviously, I hate it for the kids because, I mean, they're the ones that are – they only get to go through this one time, and they're the ones that are actually putting out the strong effort and stuff. But, you know, I just feel for them because I felt like they got cheated. I mean, I get to come back and work with another group of kids. You know what I mean? Like, for me, it was – it took me a while to get over it. Yeah. But, I mean, I think I've been able to move on with it and stuff. But you just – you can't – it was funny because they did this little video montage for me after the Hillsborough game, and I had a player that played for me on the team that you mentioned earlier, the super sectional team that went to 31-1. But so she says, "Coach, one thing I learned from you was that, you know, you can't control what officials do. Just forget about the foul, move on and play." And she said that's kind of been applicable to the rest of her life. You know, you can't control everything, blah, blah, blah. But she said, ironically, it was right after you'd gotten a technical. So that was an awesome little story, you know.
But, you know, see, like those types of anecdotes right there, that's, I mean, in a lot of ways, that's why you get into coaching right there.
Oh, definitely, yeah. And it was really nice with all those because all the girls would connect to something that we either did or something that I had told them or whatever. And, then, you know, that's kind of nice to hear those things come back years later. Because I always say, you know, it takes a few years for kids to really, truly, you know, I push kids pretty hard. People know that, and challenge them and try to get them to work out of their comfort zone. And when they're going through it, it's not always the most pleasurable thing. But I think when they have time to reflect back, they really, truly understand, you know, the importance of trying to work to your potential and all that. So, you know, it's nice to hear those things back from older kids.
And, you know, that 13-14 team, that was Maddie Grilling's sophomore year. By the time it was Maddie's senior year, you guys ascended all the way to the number one ranking in the state. And I know at the time, you're not concerned about it. But as you think about that now, that is really cool. You had the top ranked team in the entire state.
Right. Yeah. That was a special group of kids. I mean, they worked really hard. We had gotten going back to middle school and got into the championship game of the 4A. That was the year where we got bumped up to 4A and had to go through Edwardsville and the Springfields and the Chicago schools and stuff. So getting into the championship game, got beat by Normal Kingsley, who had been undefeated for 2 years. They had a girl that went on to play at DePaul. And, you know, it's just one of those things. You're a special group of kids, and just enjoyed all my time with them.
And, Steve, I'm not going to ask you to rank teams, rank players, but for my money, Maddie Grilling is about the best high school basketball player at the point guard position I've seen in a long time. She was phenomenal.
Oh, yeah. I mean, especially pound for pound, because she was the biggest girl. But, man, she had good instincts, basketball instincts. We would always try to, a lot of times people try to play us, man, we'd set her up and try to create a mismatch, a switch, and then she could just take it at post players and score going to the bucket, or she could hit the three, or she could pull up and shoot the mid-range shot. And then on top of that, just to her ball handling ability. So, yeah, as far as a well-rounded player and a player with great instincts, she definitely would be right there at the top of the list, definitely.
And if she was 5'10", she's a D1 player.
Oh, no, without a doubt. Yeah, her skill level and her instincts and stuff were very, very good. I mean, like I said, you don't get those type of kids that often, so very, very special player.
Steve, these last couple weeks here, you know, when you're just kind of sitting around, maybe letting your mind wander, what are the moments, what are the images that pop into your head about your time at Southwestern?
Well, I would say in general about coaching, I'm just starting to reflect more on who had an impact on me as a player and as a coach, and you start just like the kids appreciating what you do for them afterwards. It's the same way, I think, with coaching. You start to reflect back on the people who influenced you, people you played for, coached with, or whatever. And I think it's just those connections, you know, especially here recently. I've had a couple people that have passed away. Stan Mack of Hoosier Alton High sort of gave me a break there and got into his coaching group there. And like Larry Graham, that was at SIU for years in Madison High School, he passed away recently. And, you know, those are guys I played for at SIU. And, you know, a guy down in Florida I played for at North Florida, Bill Wright. I mean, there's a lot of people just have a big influence on you as you're coming through. And that's kind of what I've been reflecting a lot on.
If you had an opportunity to speak to young coaches, What would be the best piece of advice you think you could give them about getting into this profession, that is high school coaching?
Well, I think, like, for me personally, I mean, I've had great support here at home with my wife. My wife has just been phenomenal in terms of just letting me do what I have a passion for, and it's obviously it takes a lot of your time. And so I would just say, you know, find a partner who is going to embrace what you do and let you enjoy your passion. And because, I mean, you know, it can be very disruptive for some people because of the time factor, and not everyone's cut out to do that. You have to have a very, very strong passion for it. Secondly, I would just say, hey, enjoy it. I think sometimes over the years I've kind of gotten caught up in the coaching and the grind and the competitiveness, and sometimes you don't take as much time as you probably should to enjoy it along the way. Those would be my two things that, looking back, I would suggest to younger people.
What's next for Steve Willie? I know I think I talked to you a couple of years ago. Maybe some traveling coming up?
Yeah, we'd like to travel a little bit. We'd like to get out. And, you know, obviously with the COVID stuff here recently, we haven't been able to do as much of that. Actually, next week I'm getting to go to Colorado to my son. So,
nice.
You know, so I'm looking forward to just getting out and doing some things. And, you know, we might relocate. We've got some grandkids down in Florida. My wife would like to get down there closer to them. And I'm not sure I'm done coaching yet. Depends on where we end up and what's available. And, you know, like I said, it would have to be the right fit. But I really do still have a strong passion for the basketball and would like to continue to do some of that.
Steve Willie, thank you so much, not just for your time here this morning, but for all the dedication and hours you put in over the years. I've always loved watching your teams compete. I've always appreciated the time that you've given me through the years. So just thank you so much, sir, and you will be missed.
Well, I appreciate those comments. They mean a lot to me. And again, I appreciate what you guys do through the radio station covering the high school sports.
Steve Woolley, congratulations on a Hall of Fame career. And if you do come back, by the way, just so you know, counting girls and boys, you're 13 wins away from 600.
Yeah, I did know that stat.
Thanks, Steve.
All right, thank you, Tim.
That is Steve Woolley. I guess I can't say the head coach of the Southwestern Piassaw Birds. The former.
The junior high Birds, you can't.
There you go, the junior high Birds coach. And, David, that is, though, you want to know what makes girls basketball specifically, what makes a program strong? It's the lower levels. And when Steve Woolley was doing that back in the day, that was not the normal thing to have the varsity coach go down and be coaching the middle schoolers. But he had a plan, and boy, did the plan work out. And that game where they got screwed in the sectional, I thought I was going to get fired that day. I really did, because I don't go off on officials. I just don't. It's not my style. It's not our style here at the radio station. But I knew the bucket was late. I mean, it was obvious. Both teams were celebrating on the floor. It's one of the oddest scenes I've ever seen. But I thought I was in big trouble with Terry Tope. I came in the next day, and I just went right into his office. I said, "Well, how much trouble am I in?" And he said, "None." He had the paper with the picture of the ball in the hand, the red light on the backboard, and triple zeros on the clock. He said, "You got it right." I said, "So I'm not in trouble?" He said, "No." I said, "Well, that's good. That makes me happy." But that was an unbelievable ball game that night. Let's switch gears now and talk some Lincoln Woods soccer with Lancers head coach Joe Webb. And Joe, thank you for a few minutes of your time this morning. Have you adjusted to spring soccer yet?
We are, first of all, thanks for the opportunity to come on the show. But, yeah, we're slowly getting adjusted. It took a while to get with the overlap between sports to get our full squad. But now we're about 2 weeks full squad, and I feel like we made some major improvements just over the past week.
Talk to me a little bit about your squad, your seniors in particular, because, you know, they've been so displaced. As juniors, they got messed up. Now their whole senior year has been jacked up. So talk to me about the seniors on your squad.
Well, I can't say enough just about all the kids in general on our squad, because there hasn't been a single complaint about any type of mandate. You know, they're just excited to play. But my seniors, I have six of them, and every day they come ready to go. They enforce, you know, the rules that we have on the team, make sure everybody has their mask on, all that stuff. But yeah, they come to practice ready to go. They understand that, you know, there's not necessarily a postseason this year, but they're ready to go out and play every game.
It's such a weird dynamic with these COVID seasons, but I think you nailed it right there. The most important thing is they get a chance to compete, because during the fall, it wasn't looking good.
Yeah, I, up until probably January or February, I was just kind of expecting not to have a season. So then things changed pretty quickly, and then it was just a mad dash to get ready to go, and now we're just excited that we get to play soccer every day. I love my group of kids that I'm coaching this year. I have 29 kids. I haven't had that many before, so it's fun to go to practice every day. It's fun to compete, and we're loving it.
Boy, and from a coaching perspective, that's a testament to you, Joe, when your numbers are at an all-time high, especially in a year like this. That means kids want to come out and play some soccer for Joe Webb.
Well, I think that they want to get out of the house. I don't know if it's Joe Webb, but I think our program is in a pretty good place, and we're building, and kids are ready to get out, and they're ready to compete.
That's exactly right. How have you liked the competition so far early in the season? Talk to us about just kind of the on-field nature of a year so far. What have you seen? What have you liked?
Well, we just played our second game of the year last night against Lutheran. We won 1-0, and we went to Plains last Saturday and lost to Plains. But I'd say that, honestly, the best thing about it is the kids have hit the ground running, and we had a long time in between soccer seasons, and I feel like they picked up what we've been doing, you know, right from the start of practice. We've always been a team that tries to possess the ball, that has a game plan for when we're winning, when we're losing, how we defend, all of that. And the older kids have taught the younger kids, and our younger classes are super talented. And so the biggest thing I've seen is we've just picked up from what we've done in the past, and we're able to keep our system going.
And it seems to me, as kind of a soccer outsider, that the enthusiasm in high school soccer is on the rise. Because, you know, youth soccer is probably more popular than youth baseball for little kids. But somewhere along the line, soccer seems to fall out of favor. I get the sense that tide is turning a little bit.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think a lot of kids are playing more soccer. It's on TV a lot more. We've had quite a few kids go on and play college soccer, and I think that does a little bit as well, because kids kind of see that opportunity out there to play soccer, and I think that we have a fun time while we're on our team, so that contributes to it a little bit as well.
Now, that's the most important thing is, I mean, you got to have fun. At the end of the day, we all want to win, but if you're not having fun, what's the point?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I have discussions throughout the year quite a bit with my kids, and at the end of the day, are we having enough fun?
Mm-hmm. What do you hope to get out of the remainder of the season here? Obviously, the weather will be a big factor. You know, you can have games scheduled, but it might get washed out. So what do you hope that your team can accomplish here moving forward on the field?
Well, I think our biggest goal is to win as much as we can. You know, get as many wins as we can this spring. And our schedule is kind of backloaded because of the fact that we've had some quarantine issues with some other teams. We've had weather issues. So So we play two games, and I think we play 10 games in the next 3 weeks. Mm. So we will just getting our legs under us, starting to get into shape for the fall season as well. And realistically, it's a quick turnaround from spring to summer to fall. And so we might be in the best shape we've ever been in when it comes to fall soccer this year.
And that was going to be my next question. There's been a lot of talk about, you know, football with the spring into the summer into the fall. Boys soccer's in the exact same boat. So have you structured things with the short off season in mind as you've gotten ready for this spring season?
Not necessarily. We kind of have the same game plan no matter what once the season begins. But whereas football is probably a way more physical game, soccer is all about touch and all about, you know, muscle memory and things like that. Something we talk about all the time is kids figuring out the weight of a pass or the weight of a shot, how much they need to put on it. And I really think that this spring season is going to benefit our summer season or our summer sessions and then our fall season, because they're not going to have to recalibrate, I guess you'd say. They're going to know about the weight of the pass. So this is almost, the summer will be a preseason, but this is a good tune-up for us.
Sounds good. Joe Webb, thank you so much for a few minutes of your time, sir, and best of luck the rest of the way during this spring campaign.
All right, thanks a lot.
That's Joe Webb, the head coach of the Lincoln Wood Lancers boys soccer team. We will get to a break here on Sports Saturday. When we come back, we're going to catch up with Litchfield volleyball coach Mitchell Hughes when Sports Saturday continues.
Back to Sports Saturday here on WSMI, and we rejoin Tim Mize.
Thank you, David. We got Cardinal baseball for you later on today. Cards and Marlins, just three spring training games left. 4:55 with the coverage today on WSMI AM 1540, 106.9 and 92.9 FM. Opening day Thursday in Cincinnati. We'll have all 162 regular season games, and fingers crossed, hopefully October baseball as well, all season, AM 1540, FM 106.9 and 92.9. Coming up in volleyball today, you've got Nokomis traveling to Staunton, Carthen DeVille hosting North Mac, Porta is at New Berlin, and Pittsfield will be at Greenfield Northwest. And then there's a couple of triangular matches, Wood River, Carrollton, and CM, and then Vandalia, St. Teresa, and St. Thomas More. That's something we have seen a little bit with basketball in the normal year over the last couple of years, and now we're seeing it in volleyball as well. It's a good way to get multiple games in one day at the same place. Happy to be joined on the phone right now by Mitchell Hughes, the Litchfield volleyball coach. And Mitchell, thank you for a few minutes of your time this morning. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Hey, we are fantastic. And what has spring volleyball been like here so far?
You know, it's not what I expected my first year of coaching. Definitely thought we would have had our season in the fall, but due to COVID, that wasn't going to happen. But the girls are coming out. We have 23 girls this year across seniors to freshmen. So great turnout, and they're working hard. They're doing great so far.
And obviously when you take over a program, you want as many practices as you can get in to kind of get your system installed and get the girls comfortable with the way you want to play. And you alluded to it. You didn't have that luxury this year. So what have been the challenges of trying for you to get adjusted to the kids and for the kids to get adjusted to you when you have such limited contact?
Oh, yeah. The contact was definitely limited. I was fortunate enough to have some summer workouts. We were able to meet with small groups during the summer, and I had to split them up into four groups. So I was out in Litchfield for about 4 hours, about 2 days a week during the summer. And then we were lucky enough to have some fall contact days where we got to work with the girls with their volleyball skills, and that was a great opportunity, especially new to the program and building something new, being able to see where they're at and where we need to start to get the season rolling. So that was a great opportunity. The beginning of the season, we only were able to have seven practices before, or the requirement is to have seven practices before our first game. In a normal year, we would have had usually about 10 to 14. So we really had to get the ball rolling. So lucky enough, we did have some time in the beginning of the year to get some contact with them, but we definitely just came out of the gate and had to teach them a lot.
And, you know, in volleyball, skill development is important in every sport. But, man, for volleyball, it just seems like such a critical part of the foundation is the fundamentals and the skill work.
Definitely. Definitely, yes. Yep, we really had to break some bad habits. Mm-hmm. So that was a challenge, coming into a program where we wanted them to do things a little bit differently than what they've previously been taught. So that was a challenge in and of itself. But we're definitely focusing on those fundamental skills and trying to build up those younger girls for hopefully the future of the program.
As you look at your seniors, obviously that nobody would choose to have these circumstances, obviously. But how have your seniors adapted and how have they taken to this strange end to their high school careers?
Oh, they've adjusted perfectly. They've adjusted exactly how we wanted them to. They're stepping up. They're still being leaders on and off the court, in and out of the classroom. We are lucky enough to have the girls vote for the captains this year, and they actually decided to choose three captains because of the leadership that we have behind our seniors. And we're lucky enough to have seven seniors this year. So it's a great group of girls, and they're really helping those underclassmen, just showing them the fundamentals, making sure they're doing the drills work, the drills right, and really showing them how to communicate on the court.
Talking with Mitchell Hughes, the Litchfield volleyball coach. And Mitchell, you know this, but when you can have your players kind of take ownership of the program, that means a lot. And you can say something to your blue in the face, but sometimes if one of their peers says the exact same thing for whatever reason, it just clicks.
Oh, yeah. And we just had our first captain's meeting yesterday, and we talked to those girls about that and just making sure that they have that understanding of it comes better off when a senior or a peer says it versus just the coach. So we're definitely trying to create that culture in our program with the seniors leading. And not only the seniors, but also the juniors, because we've definitely had some girls step up and lead.
And when I think about, I mean, the South Central Conference in volleyball, my goodness, year in, year out, it is just stacked and loaded. So talk a little bit about that and just, I mean, every night in the South Central Conference, it's a dogfight.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It is. It's been tough. We have some great competition. We definitely got our feet wet with our first game playing against Staunton. They came in heavy, came in hot, and we definitely weren't ready, unfortunately, just due to the only having seven practices, and we're rebuilding the program. But it definitely woke up some of the girls and realized, you know what, we need to step up and get to that level. Playing Carlinville, playing Tana, they're tough. And it's a wake-up call, but it's a good wake-up call, and hopefully it can fuel the fire for wanting them to compete and play hard.
Yeah, that's a brutal start, getting Staunton out of the gate. That's like being a baseball team and having to play the 27 Yankees in your first game.
Oh, I know. But you know what? It was good. It was good for us.
Mitchell, what do you hope to get from the remainder of the season? Not necessarily in wins and losses, but where do you want to see growth on your team here moving forward?
Biggest thing right now is just making sure the girls are communicating on the court. I feel like that is where we're lacking. So hopefully we can improve in that factor, just making sure that we're communicating. We want, of course, to improve our skills, our rotations, everything. We just want to be improving fundamentally every day. We're trying to get the girls to find something that they've improved on in practice and a game. So then that way we're always in that growth mindset, because if we're not in that growth mindset, really, what are we here for? So.
Fantastic. Sounds like the Litchfield volleyball program headed in the right direction. Mitchell Hughes, thank you so much for a few minutes of your time, sir. Enjoy the rest of your spring season.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. That's Mitchell Hughes, the head coach of Litchfield volleyball. And you know, David, Litchfield had that on the volleyball front and on the football front. Now, they're not playing spring football, but, you know, you've got new coaches coming in at the beginning of this pandemic, so they haven't had the normal contact that you would have in a regular situation.
They've got new baseball, too, because last year should have been their baseball coach's first season, but obviously they didn't have it, so it's a new baseball coach as well.
So is it still his first year, then?
I don't know.
Or is it technically? Because he's technically been hired.
Yeah, he's been
for
the coach
2 years.
For 2 years.
Wonder how that works.
I don't know. They didn't. Did they start practices? No, this started with basketball. This ended with basketball.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they haven't even practiced. And, well, I guess they're practicing now. But, yeah, this would, I don't know. Maybe we should ask him when we eventually talk to him.
Yeah, we'll have baseball and softball come up here in just a few weeks. You know, David, I was thinking about this yesterday about just, you know, we haven't had a state basketball tournament for 2 years now. And when you go to the state tournament and when you get into the March Madness experience, they've got, you know, a big banner that has all the champions. And there was always that blank spot where Hales Franciscan had to vacate the title because the coach admitted they had a good recruiting year in the post-game press conference and got vacated. But there will now be two blank spots, you know, 2 years without a state champion.
Well, they could just do it like we did it with the WISMI Cup for the bracket and just say COVID won last year.
Oh, boy, COVID did win last year, didn't it?
COVID won. Yes, it went unbeaten last year in all sports.
Mm. But it does feel like it's getting behind us now. Like being out at Cromville last night for the football game, great crowd. You know, people were doing what they needed to do in terms of the guidelines and all that. But what I didn't realize that I was going to miss is the bands playing the national anthem. Got Greenville last week, got Carlinville last night. I have no use for the Barbershop Quartet pre-recorded national anthem. Get that out of here.
You don't want the Whitney Houston flyover recorded one?
Not really.
Yeah.
Not really. But when a high school band performs the Star Spangled Banner, it is just, it's poetry in motion. It's beautiful.
Oh, absolutely. We, you know, speaking of the Whitney Houston version, we had that at, I was doing a Gillespie baseball game a few years ago. And they played that version. And of course you had the flyovers coming and everything and everybody's looking up. What's going on?
Of course. As long as it's not the Roseanne version.
Oh, yeah. Why not just throw that in there?
Oh.
That'd be interesting.
If you're looking to punish someone, just put that in a loop.
Yeah.
And make them listen to that thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely up there with the bottom. The probably the worst of all time.
It has to be. Carl Lewis's was no good.
Carl, is his national anthem? I thought his was a Take Me Out to the Ball Game.
I thought it was the... don't know.
I think you might be confusing.
I
don't know. I could be wrong.
Whatever he's saying, it was awful.
Yeah.
It was terrible. Whatever he was saying, it was no good.
Well, R. Kelly did one at a WWE event, or this time it might have been WWF, but and it turned into some sort of concert performance. It was not good.
No. Well, nothing R. Kelly does is good.
This is true.
David, you were telling me off the air, we're going to catch up with Big Ed, or medium-sized Ed.
Or middle-sized Ed.
Or middle-sized Ed. Yeah. We're going to have Ed on the program here in just a couple of minutes to talk about his friend, Bobby Plager. But, David, you were telling me off the air about Joe Cunningham.
Yes, former Cardinals All-Star. He competed with the batting title with Hank Aaron back in 59. He passed away this week, and actually he was the first person that I ever interviewed as an employee of this station, ever interviewed in an official capacity at all. Of course, how did I get to do that? Why did I interview Joe Cunningham? He was visiting Russell School in Litchfield back a few years ago as part of their stay-in-school stuff that the Cardinals do. They travel around. Fred Bird was there. And he took time out of his busy schedule, gracious enough to speak with me for a few minutes and... yeah, just a kind man. I have nothing but good things to say about him. Obviously, it's not like I can say I know him well because I just spent a few minutes with him. But got to speak with him, and it said a lot about his character for him to just take a few minutes and speak to me because, I mean, who am I?
Who are you? You're David Jenkins. What do you mean, who are you?
I was David Jenkins at the time, but at the time, that was my first interview. So it's like, who was I? So, yeah, always be grateful to him and appreciative to him for doing that. And saddened to hear of his passing this week.
And, of course, the entire hockey world was saddened to hear about the passing of Bobby Plager this week. Tragically passed away, and it was a cardiac event. Of course, at first it looked like it might have been some sort of car accident, but it was a cardiac event that took the life of Bobby Plager. And Ed Wernstein knew Bobby. He's been a season ticket holder with the Blues since 1967. I think He's gone on vacation with Bobby, you know, out to dinner, all the things that you do with your friends. And so we're going to catch up with Ed here and reminisce about the life of Bobby Plager. Remind you, Cardinal baseball coming up today on WSMI AM 1540, FM 106.9 and 92.9, the Cards and the Marlins today at 4:55. You are listening to WSMI FM, Litchfield, Hillsboro, Carthenville, and Greenville, your 50,000-watt sports voice of mid-Illinois. Opening day for the Redbirds is set for Thursday, and we'll have that, of course, for you, AM 1540, 106.9, and 92.9 FM. I think we're making connection with Ed right now, and we got him. Ed Wernstein, good morning, sir. How are you doing today?
Good morning, Tim. Every day is a good day for me anymore since the Lord, my wife, saved my life.
That's exactly right. And now we got to get this out of the way. You're always going to be Big Ed to me. But are you medium-sized Ed or middle-sized Ed?
Right.
So Ed,
medium-sized Ed usually, but I'm really Big Ed. Everybody calls me.
You'll always be Big Ed. You always will be. So Ed, talk to me about Bobby Plager. I mean, obviously, when the news came down earlier this week, we were all shocked, but you knew him for real.
Yeah.
So just kind of talk about your thoughts, your feelings, your emotions here.
He was really a tough guy back, we're talking about way back in the 60s,
mm-hmm.
and we had tickets from 67. And in fact, the tickets were actually owned by Consolidation Coal, and we went to all the games the first year. But those guys from West Virginia didn't cotton to hockey that much. So we bought the tickets the next year is what we did. And then we've had them season tickets ever since then.
So
and we used to sit eight.
Oh, go ahead.
We used to sit nine rows off the ice in the old building. And that building was fantastic and so much fun because the players could hear you on the ice.
Hmm. That could be good or bad, I guess, for them.
Yeah. It goes back all the way to the Boston series.
Wow.
And Bob Plager, he was really a tough cookie. Him and I'm trying to think of number three for the Blues, too. Noel Picard. Oh, he was a Frenchman. He didn't speak the best English in the world.
And, you know, Big Ed, it's a man's sport still today. I mean, they make football players look like wimps. But I would imagine that the guys who played hockey in the 60s, they might think that hockey players today are wimps.
That's true. That's very, very true, because they didn't wear helmets back then.
Oh. And I never understood, Big Ed, how the goalies didn't wear a face mask.
Right. And there was a guy from Minnesota. His name was Gumper Worsley. And they had a thing on down there at the Blues at one time that said that he had over 700 stitches in his face over the years.
Oh, my gosh. Brutal.
Unbelievable.
So, Ed, talk to me about how you came to know Bob Plager as a friend. How did that come about?
Well, back in those days, the players didn't make a lot of money like they do today. So a lot of them had summer jobs where they came from Canada. So a lot of them, after the game at the old arena, there was a bowling alley right across the way, a 72-lane bowling alley. And some of the players would come over and have a beer afterwards. And, we, you know, in those days, people wouldn't bucket them for autographs mm-hmm. like they do today. And we'd sit around and have beers and just talk and became very, very good friends. And then years ago, I was Santa for the Blues, and I'd ride the Zamboni machine on the ice, always stayed in character. And then they had Blue Angels on the north end of the building, and I would dance with the Blue Angels. And then afterward, they'd have me go down into the locker room. And Bobby Plager and his brother Bark and all the Blues back in the day, Glenn Hall, the goaltender, and I'd go in and play. And I remember Bobby one time, he says, "Boy, you're a big one."
Oh, that is fantastic. Well, was there a moment early on in the friendship when you just had the thought, wait a minute, I'm friends with Bob Plager?
That's right, and I kept hitting myself in the face saying that.
So, you know, for most of us, we just know the highlights, know the stories of the man. But as you think about Bob Plager, the human being, what comes to mind?
He was humanitarian that you would not believe. It was always about the kids. It was always about one thing that happened to us years ago. We were at Grant's Farm, Alexis and I. You know, she was an electric wheelchair. And all the players would talk to Alexis. They knew how intelligent she was, and she always was dressed out in her Blues gear. Well, we went to the Grant's Farm for a special they had for disabled kids to raise money. And Bob sat at our table with Alexis and I and some other people, and they auctioned off a picture, and it was, you know, I have one of two in existence, and they're worth a lot of money now, I found out. And it was a very famous picture of Bob Plager hip-checking Bobby Orr, who is the best offensive defenseman to ever play the game of hockey. And we were sitting there at that table, and there's a guy at the table next to it. There's some old, they probably thought they were important people. And they leaned over to Bob, and they said, do you think that guy and with that little girl in the wheelchair can afford that picture? And Bobby says, they got it covered. Shut up.
Oh, and you know, because that's a better picture than the picture I think of Bobby Orr with him diving, you know, headlong across the ice
right.
in that famous photo of the Stanley Cup final. That's a better picture you have.
Yeah. You'll have to stop by the store. I've got it. It's a picture that they used to do posters, big posters, and there's two of these posters in existence. I've got one of them. And you can see it, and it's signed by both Bob Plager, and it has, he has a very distinctive signature when he signs his pictures.
Hmm.
But then from there on in the years, we saw him a lot of different things. And Dave Fleming, the late Dave Fleming from Litchfield at Fleming Toffel,
mm-hmm.
we would take kids from Rotary down to the hockey games, and I would get super seats for them. And then they would let us go in. And in fact, Jorgen Pettersson used to play for the Blues from Sweden. And we went down into the locker room after the game, and the kids from Sweden that were here from Rotary Exchange, talked to him in Swedish, and they're talking back and forth, and Plager looks at me and says, I don't understand what they're saying. Do you? I said, no, Bob, but I said, at least they do.
Yeah, as long as they do.
Not many people speak Swedish in St. Louis.
No, that's an obscure one for sure. And, Big Ed, it's great when – you know, for a lot of people, sports figures are heroic in a lot of ways, but you don't know them. So you just assume, oh, yeah, I'm sure they're a nice person and a good guy. But with Bobby Plager, that was 100% true. I mean, fantastic hockey player, but just a better human being. And that, to me, makes him an even better hockey player.
Yes, he was. Many years ago, they had a pub out in West County off of 270 and Dorset Road. Called in the Paseo Village Shopping Center. And a bunch of us, I'd take people into St. Louis for hockey games. And we're talking back in the early 70s. And we'd go out there because I knew that area. And we'd sit down and some of my friends, there's Tim Van Galder and Irv Goody and fellas from the football Cardinals back in the day. And Barkley and Bob and Billy were there. And we'd have the most fun in that place afterwards. Just an absolute blast.
Oh, that is, I mean, were you just pinching yourself about every 2 minutes to make sure you were, in fact, awake?
That's true. And then in later years, Bob, Patty and I are part of a group that we travel. The Blues will pick a game, or we will, and like maybe we'll 40 or 50 of us will go to Dallas. In fact, and we go to Vegas. We fly to California. Every winter, we would go to a foreign city. And a lot of times, Bob and Brett Hull, and they would accompany us as the retired members of the Blues. And Bob was such a humanitarian, and he was a lot of fun. In fact, I've got a picture here I'll have to show you. It shows Bob and I at the Hard Rock Cafe in Dallas. Now, this is last year when Bennington just came up, and that's when we went from worst to first. And we talked about the old building, and Bob just looked up. A lot of people were gathered around it. And Bob says, Big Ed's right. All these things he's talking about in the old building really happened. And he's just the nicest guy. And he'd always sit down and I got to talk to Patty and I and then our kids then too. Just a wonderful guy. Every time he went to a hockey game, he was there. He would always greet the people. And he was so good about that. Little kids would come up and say, Mr. Plager, can I have your autograph? He would always sign these for these kids. He was a wonderful, wonderful guy and a humanitarian.
And he was fairly superstitious from what I gather here. If the game wasn't going well, he was going to find a different spot in the arena that was going to make the game go well. And when he found it, he wasn't moving.
That's right. He would, like in the Boston series when we won the Stanley Cup, he would walk up and down the hallways instead of watch the game. When they score a goal, then he would say, "Oh, all right." But he was really superstitious about watching the game, especially when he got to the Stanley Cup series.
Talking with Big Ed Bernstein here, and Big Ed, just, I mean, you said it, you've been a season ticket holder with the Blues since 1967.
67.
When they won the Cup, could you hardly believe it?
Oh, we all had tears in our eyes. I knew we had it won when Tarasenko went in the corner. He looked across the center ice. He saw Braden Schenn coming down, and he passed the puck. He knew he was going to get hit in that corner. And that's when we went up 4-2. We have got the Stanley Cup won now. And that was about 4 minutes before the game ended in Boston.
That was something. And I had always thought, I mean, the Blues have been so good for so long, but could never get over that hump. And I just always thought, when they win the Cup, it's not going to be a situation where they're just the best team all year long and they roll through. I didn't exactly think they'd go from worst to first, but what a fitting way for them to finally hoist the Cup.
Oh, yeah, it really was. We were all in tears and just so happy. And the Blues, since we're season ticket holders so long, they have a lot of special events just for us in the suite up there in the Enterprise Center. And we get to meet a lot of the players one-on-one, and they're also very, very nice. In fact, we just had a picture taken with Bo Meester and David Perron and Ryan O'Reilly. And they looked at Patty and I, and they said, "You've been season ticket holders longer than we've been alive." I said, "That's right. That's why we waited so long." We had all 16. My wife and I went to all 16 of the Stanley Cup Finals, except for one game. I took a very, very good friend of mine, Pat Drew, from who was the principal at Cardinal High School with me at the last minute, and I was able to take him. And we went to all the games, and one couple sold their tickets for one of the games for, I'm talking a lot of money, over five figures for two tickets. And my wife says, "Ed, if you sell our tickets for any one of these games, I'll divorce you."
And she meant it, didn't she?
She meant it. She loves hockey because it's such a difference from the hospital.
Absolutely. Big Ed Wernstein, thank you so much for a few minutes of your time here. And I guess before we let you go, when you think of Bob Plager, what will be kind of the first couple things that come into your mind?
A smile on his face and always to greet people. He loved people.
Big Ed Wernstein, thank you so much for joining us this morning to talk about the great Bobby Plager.
Thank you very much, Tim.
All right, Big Ed Wernstein. There you go, David. He's always going to be Big Ed.
But he's medium-sized Ed now.
He's medium-sized Ed.
He clarified it.
What a great guy Ed Wernstein is.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, you hear him talk about Bob Plager, and it's just, it's nice to know that people like Bobby Plager still exist in this world. Mm-hmm. You know, we need more Bob Plagers walking the face of this earth, because you heard Big Ed talking about it. Humanitarian, always a smile on his face, never turning down an autograph for a kid. And maybe it's because when he was playing, you know, they didn't make the big bucks. You heard Big Ed allude to that. It was just a different environment. You had more access to these professional athletes back then than you do now. And now everyone's just trying to get something from you. You know, what can you do for me as the big time professional athlete? That's not the way it used to be. And for Bob Plager, even though as the times changed, he never got to a situation where he was like, "I'm Bob Plager.
Yeah.
Who are you?" You know, that's the legacy. That's a better legacy than you can ever have just based on ice performance.
Right.
You know, there's plenty of people who are great at the sport they do, but they're just atrocious human beings. Bobby Plager, the exact opposite of that, personifies everything that you want, not just a professional athlete to be, that you want your kid to be. Or your friends to be, you know, if they're like Bobby Plager, they're in a good spot.
Well, like you said, it probably has every bit to do with what the game was like when he was playing. I mean, when they weren't making millions of dollars and They weren't, I guess, your prototypical celebrity. They were just, I mean, they were regular guys hanging out with people.
Regular people. Yeah. Going to the bowling alley, having a beer.
72-lane bowling alley.
That's a big bowling alley.
That's a huge bowling alley.
So thanks very much to Big Ed for joining us here this morning to talk about his friend, Bob Plager. Terry used to call this extra time. We went into extra time today on Sports Saturday, and it was absolutely worth it. Thanks to Aaron Duff for joining us this morning. To Steve Woolley, congratulations to Coach Woolley on his Hall of Fame coaching career. Thanks to Joe Webb and Mitchell Hughes for being with us here this morning on Sports Saturday. And again, thanks to Big Ed Warnsey. Cardinal baseball for you today, 4:55 with the pregame. Cards Marlins on WQSMI AM 1540, FM 106.9 and 92.9. For David Jenkins, I am Tim Mize. Sports Saturday is done. Have a great weekend, everybody.